Good morning, I'm Jeff Bryan. This is The Jeff Bryan Show. Here we are, 3 for 3, or close to 3 for 3. I'm not going to keep this pace up. I know most of you aren't going to listen to all three of these podcasts, but there's a reason I'm doing yet another podcast with very similar content, and that is A, some things have changed. B, I listened to yesterday's show and I realized I didn't articulate a lot of my thoughts very clearly. And I think if for no other reason, I want to go back and make sure I'm really clear as to what I believe, what I think, and why I think it. News keeps coming out every day. This is a tumultuous time, and I think people are looking for content. So hell, I'll throw my 2 cents in the ring. I'm going to open with that actually. One of my big takeaways yesterday is like, wow, I'm really getting down a rabbit hole that I'm frankly not an expert in. I'm very interested in political philosophy. So I like the place where, let's say, politics, economics, and philosophy all collide. That's interesting to me because that's where better systems are born. You know, it used to be that if you were a philosopher way back when, you would probably get into economics because the system in which a society is built upon largely dictates the happiness of its people. And that is wildly interesting to me. Those that know, I have a degree in finance. I'm very interested in economics. I work in news. I work in economics. So I think that's very interesting. And that's really kind of the nuts and bolts to how a society works and how much wealth there is. And I see a direct correlation between wealth and happiness. This is all stuff I really like to talk about. What I don't like to talk about, and I find myself talking about a lot, is the political characters. I'm not an expert in this. I never found it wildly interesting. I found it pretty nauseating. And all of a sudden, I find myself going into this place where I'm a little more tribal than I want to be. Like, I don't want to say, like, rah, 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 go this team or that team. I think that's very damaging. And I realize I'm kind of starting to do that a little bit. And I'm kind of starting to say, this guy's good, bad, whatever. The truth is, when I back up, I've never found any politician to be all that impactful to my day-to-day life. And I think I've made that clear in the past, but I want to remind people of that. So when I get into the differences between candidates or what I think is, you know, good for the political environment or whatever, I'm a moron. To borrow from Joe Rogan and Bill Burr, I'm a moron. Like, this is not my area of expertise or study. It's just something I have a lot of emotion around right now, which everybody does and everybody should. What I need to do a better job of is taking a step back and maybe articulating more of the philosophy behind maybe a party's ideologies and less about the candidate. That said, I'm probably still going to go down the rabbit hole of, you know, what I think of a candidate more in the near future than I will, let's say, after everything around this election dies down. So I just wanted to be clear about all that. All that aside, I think I speak for everybody when I say the real winner of this election was drugs. Let me pull up the article really quick. But basically, every measure that had to do with recreational drugs around the country or the medical use of drugs was passed. So hold on. Let me pull it up here. Of course, this is in the marijuanamoment.net magazine. I think it's a really legit source. They just did a good job aggregating all the ballot results. But in places like Arizona, Mississippi, Montana, New Jersey, Oregon, South Dakota, Washington, D.C., there were measures passed that really went, you know, really flew in the face of the war on drugs. And can we just stop the war on drugs now? Is that a thing? Can we just like stop wasting money on this? So this is an area like people are like, Jeff, you're so conservative. It's like, I'm really not. I really do straddle this middle ground, I believe. And this is one area I strongly believe in more liberal principles. I'm not a fan of overregulation of drugs. I think it creates more harm than good, and just about across the board. And I have a lot of studies I can cite on this. There's a lot of countries that have attempted different paths to, let's say, addiction mitigation with far greater success than the United States. So on top of that, as a guy that's dealt with a concussion and I've had to go down kind of the pharmacological rabbit hole, there's a lot of drugs that I think are promising that haven't been studied thanks to this dumb war on drugs. One of them is psilocybin. I've actually never taken it, but I find it wildly interesting from a pharmacological perspective. And there's actually a company that just went public that they're their main drug is psilocybin for the indication of depression. And I'm very interested to see the outcome of these trials. I know there was something Joe Rogan was posting about, you know, psilocybin being shown four times more potent in the treatment of depression when compared to SSRIs. I didn't get in the study yet, but the fact is a lot of these drugs have been pulled away, not just from people being able to use them, but from being studied. And I think that is incredibly damaging to the medical community. So I'm really happy to see that we have come to our senses to a degree, as weird as that sounds, and we're going to just start doing more drugs. I mean, in a different way, I think it's clear that that we need drugs if this is our political landscape. You know, I don't know how else you can put it. And one other interesting thing. Last week, two of the biggest movers in the stock market of companies over $500 million, those that don't follow the stock market, that'd be considered a mid-cap company. The two biggest were Tilray and Aurora Cannabis Company, something like that. I can't remember the exact name. They were up like 60 and 140%, largely on these ballot measures. I think we all could have seen them coming, so I don't know why we all didn't put a bunch of money into those two and you know, held on for our nice gains there, but it is what it is. Moving on, I'm seeing a lot of celebratory posts now. Joe Biden won, rah, rah, rah. Everybody, the country's better. The country's fixed now. Boy, you know, I wish we could all take a step back and, I don't know, like sit down, be humble comes to mind. I don't think this is anything to be excited about. I tried to make an analogy yesterday. It feels like we were all, as a country, put on a shitty used car lot, and we were faced with two options. One was a Honda Civic that's maybe not running on all cylinders. It's from like 1989. I actually don't even know if they made Civics then. It's an old Honda Civic that's not even running on all cylinders. It kind of got people around for a while, and it's clearly on its last leg, and maybe there's a lot of rust, and you know, boy, this thing's closer to the scrapyard than it is the new car lot. Let's put it that way. And the other car is like, I was thinking in my head, like some esoteric, weird death trap of a muscle car that is loud and polluting and crazy. And it's got racing slicks on it. And it might go to A to B in a fast way, or it might kill you. The controls don't quite work. It's to some people, it's the sexiest car on the planet. To other people, it's just disgusting. You know, these are kind of our options. No matter which option we end up with, you know, let's say the Civic's a little safer, you know, it's like probably not going to kill you, but neither way we should be excited. There's just no way around it. Out of a country of 330 million people, the fact that these were our two choices and we're excited about one of them, I guess, I get it, maybe. I think we should instead be contemplating, A, why did half the country basically vote for the muscle car? And, you know, if you're disgusted by the muscle car, maybe we should take a step back and look at it and realize why, you know, everybody's like, ah, shit, this thing might kill me, but I'd like it better than the Civic. Maybe we should all learn and realize like, whoa, we got some, you know, if you're really on the left and you're excited about this ticket, there are so many better options out there. Like, here's an example of somebody I would have been really psyched on, Tulsi Gabbard. I think that's a great option. I think that's somebody that I would have been like, actually inspired by, actually thinking this could be a new era. I think she has been, you know, she's too in the middle. She's too much, to toot my own horn, she's too much like me. you know, it's like the way this two-party system is set up, it nauseates me. The fact I'm spending this much time, as I indicated earlier, on politics nauseates me. And this is just something that I keep coming back to is like, look, Biden's been in Washington for 40 some years. This doesn't mean he's worse than Trump, because I think Trump's got character flaws that are so far beyond fixing. I really didn't want him president either, but a man that's been there for 40 years, you really think he's going to just, you know, buck all the trends that he's been a part of before and usher in this new era of U.S. politics? Bullshit. He's not going to do any of that. He's going to just perpetuate leftist ideals that really haven't worked in the past. And some of them aren't terrible, but, you know, and nothing's really going to happen, especially, like I said yesterday, if we can retain a Republican Senate. Like I said, I want gridlock at this point. I don't like a 40-year politician, and I don't like really a lot of the politicians that I see in Washington. We need some youth. We need something new. and this isn't it at all. So anyway, I'm going to end the political rant there. I'll get into some of the philosophies, kind of like equality of outcome versus equality of opportunity. This is stuff I'm actually fascinated with, find really interesting, I find really important, and I think we need a coming together of. But what I'm trying to say is, if you're excited, maybe take a step back and realize maybe you shouldn't be excited. Maybe we should kind of be like looking to how we're going to fix this in 4 more years or 2 more years or whatever. And I also want to remind everybody, again, I believe that what we do on a community level, on a neighborly level, in our own lives, that that all matters so much more than whoever's in office. And if you're looking to who's in office to justify the decisions or the outcome of your life, I'm just going to say it. You're a victim. You're not actually taking charge of your life in a way, or you're acting as a victim. You're not taking charge of your life to the point you could. You're not taking responsibility in your life to the point you should and could. I strongly believe this is the case. I mean, I know there are really rare exceptions to this, but in a country of 330 million, it's well under 1%. It's well under 1%. So control what you can control. And politics, you know, we get to cast our vote, and then we get to pretend that we have a football team, you know, whatever party. It doesn't help. Like, just cast your vote, move on, get to work. This is going to be better for all of us. So, one more thing. And another thing. I sound like a drunk guy leaving a bar. The number of split tickets and the number of people that did vote for Trump, especially in the minorities, as I said yesterday, that, again, everybody that's super excited, take a step back, realize this shouldn't have been a close election, and it was. What does that mean? What can we learn? We should be learning right now, not cheering. We just shouldn't cheer for politicians in general, unless it really is somebody disruptive. Like, I think Tulsi would have been an example. I even think Andrew Yang or somebody that, like, outside of politics that does have good ideas, you know. I actually love to get into the universal basic income discussion at some point here. I might need to bring somebody on because I think bouncing ideas back and forth on that one's important. I actually more and more am a believer of that. And I know that sounds crazy considering my conservative values in so many ways, conservative fiscal values. But I have technological reasons I believe this. So, moving on. Next thing, I want to clarify the whole Trump needs to sit down and shut up thing. I think he needs to be more precise with his speech. I know wishing for that is a fool's errand at this point. But, you know, him suggesting that the election is stolen is just garbage. But that does not mean that I believe that any, you know, indications of fraud should not be investigated. You know, there's a difference. There's a difference between saying this election is fraudulent and, hey, I have suspicions of fraud occurring and we need to investigate those. There's a big difference. And there's also a big difference between suggesting fraud and suggesting fraud on a scale that will actually, quote unquote, steal the election. Personally, again, I don't see any probability of enough fraud, or I see very low probability of enough fraud actually skewing things toward the Dems, but maybe I'm wrong. I'm willing to wait and see, and I think wait and see is the right message right now. So again, not trying to say it shouldn't be investigated, just saying that what you say around that matters. Let's see. Next thing I want to talk about is, why in the hell are we not voting on our phones or on our computers or whatever? I know people are like, oh, but, you know, fraud, blah, blah, blah. It's like, dude, I look at my bank statements on my phone. I trade stocks on my phone. I look at my medical records on my phone. You know, two-step authentication works now. There's no reason we shouldn't be voting on our phone. You think paper ballots are somehow more secure? Clearly not. You know, we file our taxes on our phone. Or at least on our computer. You can do it on your phone. I have no justification in my mind. You know, we could use blockchain if we wanted to. You know, you could tie blockchain to a person when they're born. There's so many cool ways we could fix this problem. There's so many ways, but we're not doing it. And I hope this is a message for the next 4 years. Maybe Biden could put that in place. You know, this is one of my big concerns about Biden is he's so old. He has no idea how technology works. He's not going to be, he didn't, I just think of a lot of people over the age of 75 around computers, and like they can kind of use them, but like they still got to, you know, even my parents, they're pretty good around technology, I'll think, the technology, as they would say. And like I still get calls about pretty basic stuff. And, you know, not to say that I'm knocking them at all. It's just like they didn't grow up in this era. And this era is exactly what is driving so much of the political landscape, the information landscape, our lives. And I think you need young people to understand and be able to actually do something around this. So, just ranting now, but whatever. Next thing I want to talk about is certain measures on the ballot shouldn't have been on the ballot. and I realize I'm walking a slippery slope here because I do believe the drug use stuff should be on the ballot. However, things like wolves in Colorado should not be on the ballot. Here's why. Here's the difference. I see both sides of the wolf thing. I mean, I lean one way heavily now, but let's say, let me back up. Those that don't know, Colorado put a ballot measure in place that if you voted yes on, means they were going to reintroduce the wolf to Colorado, and if you voted no on, the wolf wasn't going to be reintroduced. So I can basically guess with pretty good accuracy, if you're a Democrat and you live in a city, or rather, if you just live in a city, you're going to be like, hell yeah, bring the wolves back. In a way, it's like Jurassic Park. It's like, you know, if I had the choice to bring the T-Rex back, hell yeah, I'm bringing the T-Rex back. Especially if it doesn't impact me. It's like, it's out in the woods. I'll go look at it when I want to. And again, I don't want the T-Rex like free range. I want like Jurassic Park T-Rex, but I guess that didn't work. So never mind. But the point is, if it's out of sight, out of mind, you can just visit it and like look at it and be like, wow, cool. That's one thing. If you're a rancher, your livelihood's at stake. Like it's an imbalance with respect to stakes. And I see this in a lot of different initiatives around the country. It's like, if you don't have a stake in what's being voted on, it makes little sense that you're voting on it. You know, like if I again, when I grew up in Colorado, I was right on the kind of on the tail end of the foothills, right? You know, it was close enough to drive to a Starbucks, but I had mountains behind my parents' house. It was kind of a cool place to grow up. But, you know, I was mostly in the city, relatively speaking. And I'd be like, yeah, wolves, sweet. Let's bring them back. Like, hell yeah. But then I moved to Western Colorado. I live in, you know, the Jackson Hole, Victor, Teton Valley area now. And it's like, okay, living here, I 100% don't want wolves reintroduced. Why? Well, I have buddies that are ranchers and wolves kill livestock. And the wolf that is being reintroduced isn't even the native wolf a lot of the time. So it's a problem. Like you can't control these animals and like they're not, not only that, but the landscape that we currently live in as humans is not the landscape of 100 years ago or 150 years ago. So it's a really tricky thing, you know, like people, it's very contentious around here. If you're a rancher, if you have anybody that is a friend of yours that's a rancher, you probably hate wolves. If you don't, you're like, oh, I want to go watch them. I mean, I think they're cool as hell. Don't get me wrong. But I don't necessarily think you can reintroduce something that doesn't impact you. It's not fair. So as a friend pointed out, like, I don't think this is something that should be voted on. And I think they're right. Like, the same way I don't think the safety of a drug, like, you know, some antidepressant or some cancer drug, I don't think that should be voted on by the people at large because they're not experts in it. And there are certain things that just shouldn't end up on the ballot, especially if you're not going to take the time to educate yourself. And most people aren't. It's a whole other conversation. I mean, that side note, this is why I think phone voting would be rad, is it could force people to go through everything issue by issue. And once you've done that, then you can vote, which I think is fair. If you're not willing to spend the time looking at stuff, why vote? Or is it fair that you vote? I don't think it is. I think if you don't care about this stuff, don't make it like a multiple choice test in high school that you didn't study for. It's not right. Like people, like I love the whole everybody should go vote thing from Hollywood. No, don't go vote. Don't go vote unless you took the time to learn about the issues and you want to like, you have an opinion and you have that opinion based on your own values. Like that's cool. You should. And hey, if you're like a total environmentalist and you think that ranching's terrible and blah, 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 and you want the wolf back, hey, I guess I see it. I don't agree with it, but at least you've like taken the time to make an opinion, to have your values and to back that up, whatever. My computer went to black mode. Hold on. Again, if we can get this funded, I'd cut this out. Oh, crap, wrong password. Okay, moving on. I wanted to clarify some of my policy around COVID because I think I was a little unclear and unfair to what I believe from a philosophical or values-based perspective. So I do not want to come across as though I'm suggesting lockdowns are the answer. I do not believe that to be the case. In fact, I don't know that lockdowns work all that well. What I do believe is that we can mitigate some of the spread. We can delay it. And I think I was clear about that. Through some lockdown measures, and it's unclear how far you got to go for that. Now, I'm suggesting like very mild or modest lockdown measures, and I'm also very much suggesting this is tied to hospitalizations in your area. This is very key. I strongly believe that locking down just to lock down makes no sense. I strongly believe that locking down, just because cases are going up, but our treatments are better, and we're assuming everything's going to be just like March of last year, is dumb. I don't think that works. I believe that masking alone does very, very little to stopping this. I think it can slow it. You know, it's not a binary situation where it's like we do all this and we fix it, or we do nothing and it runs rampant and kills everybody. It's neither one of those things. It's one of something. It's we can soften things, we can slow this, and where's the balance between doing something that helps and not completely killing the local economy, the broader economy, blah blah blah. I'm gonna go back to speed limits here because it's an easy analogy. It's like, I by no means believe the speed limit around the country should be 5 miles an hour. That's what it would take to kill nobody. Let's say, you know, if one death is too many, the speed limit should be 5 or 10. You know, and I encourage everybody while they're driving around today, if there's nobody around you, whatever the speed limit is, let's say it's 45 and you're in kind of a general two-lane road, a lot of them around here, slow down from 45 to 15 and see what that feels like. Of course, I don't think we should do that to the economy at large just for the hell of it, because one life is too many lost. We've made that decision a long time ago that, you know, there is a balance between economic activity, quality of life, and safety. Okay, but that doesn't mean that every road in America should be 100 miles an hour willy-nilly, do whatever the hell you want. And that's what I'm trying to say here. So I would personally do two things around COVID. One of them is base the lockdown measures around what is going on in the local hospital. I think if you get to a point in the local or let's say regional hospitalization or from the local hospitalization and just what's going on the medical side, where it's so overwhelmed that there's no beds, people are, or it's forecasted to go that way. Again, we have to rely on forecasting to some extent. We have to do something. We just have to, especially again, as this is a short-term thing. We're gonna come out of it, and it seems like you can lock down in certain ways. Like in this case, it'd be shutting down restaurants and bars. I know that sucks. Limiting gym use. And then every, you know, like, of course, if you are an office worker, like everything should be work from home right now anyway. And you do that for a short amount of time. It's like the economic hit will be there. But like I said, it's going to really be there either way if it does come to fruition that hospitals are overrun and the death rate goes above 1%. People will just modify their behavior anyway. So again, I'm being very clear. I think hospitalizations should drive any lockdown measures. I'm not going to pretend I'm the total expert around lockdown. I'd have to study this a little more and then suggest here are the lockdown measures I think make the most sense. But again, I think it's just too hard to ignore that bars and restaurants are places this is spread, and gyms as well. And if hospitals are overwhelmed, it's just not fair. Because the reason it's not fair to me is if, let's say you are somebody taking more risk and you get sick and you need to go to hospital, and somebody wasn't taking any risk and they get sick and they need to go to hospital and it's all overrun. Well, they can't be like, well, you were taking risks, so you're at the back of the line. It doesn't work that way. It's America. So this is why I think you've got to put provisions in place to at least try to slow this thing, especially while it's pretty unknown how well any of these lockdown measures work. I realize that I'm going out on a limb there, but I think it's important that I say that. Second, I think it's really important we weigh the risk of each demographic, and there's some personal responsibility taken into account here. I know that sounds like I'm talking out of both sides in a way, but there's no doubt this is way less deadly for those under 55, 54, than it is for those over, let's say, 65. And I know if you're in the middle there, it's kind of whatever. But I think there should be more, let's say, government-led education on best available data on a couple things. If you're, you know, what pre-existing conditions really put you at risk? I think people should know that. What supplements can you take that might help you? I mean, why we're not doing that is insane. There's no doubt there's a correlation between vitamin D and outcome. How about like how to keep your immune system strong? Like, for one, if you're at risk, maybe cut out the booze, or don't smoke cigarettes, or, you know, there's things you can do to mitigate this. If you were to get it, I know a lot of people that have gotten it, by the way, that have had absolutely no problem with it. I know actually zero people that have had problems with it. So I'm not trying to say it's not serious. And this is the final thing I wanted to get into with COVID, because I do have people saying, well, it's a hoax. Like, look how many people die otherwise. Exactly. So the best way we know this is not a hoax is there's something called an excess death calculator, or excess. The data for excess death is tracked every single year in America, really every place in the country, or sorry, world. This is how we can look at other pandemics of the past and know how deadly they were. Because obviously there was no testing for the flu of 1918, for instance. There is no testing for the bubonic plague. What we have are death records. And we're able to compare those death records to years past, and we're able to see, okay, you know, let's say the average number of deaths in the United States every year is X, and this year we're seeing X plus a certain number, and that is very much true. Right now, we have excess deaths in America of 300,000. So that means compared to the last 2 years, 300,000 more people have died than kind of expected, okay? Now, some of you might go, well, yeah, because we locked down and there was suicide. Yeah. Like, okay, there probably was an increase in suicides. We don't know that for sure yet. There probably was an increase in people that maybe had some pre-existing condition like cancer, and they were scared to go to a hospital, and they ended up dying of that cancer or something like that. There's probably going to be a lot of people that died because they didn't do an elective surgery that ended up killing them. That's super sad, and that probably happened. However, there's a flip side to this. There's no doubt, actually, and this has been reflected in the data, the number of automobile accidents killing people this year, way down. Number of people flu has killed this year, way down. Flu hasn't spread very much this year. So there's kind of a two parts of this equation here. Our lifestyle changes have actually impacted us in a positive and negative way around it. So it's really hard to tell how much of the excess death was kind of, let's say, secondary excess death to COVID. But there's no doubt COVID has driven real death in this country. There's just no way around it. And anybody that's going to continue to say this is a hoax, you clearly have not spoken to one doctor who works in an emergency room. I encourage you to do so. Like, if you're going to make a claim, you need to have some stake in this claim. You need to, if you're not a doctor, you don't know a doctor, and you're just making this up based on cherry picking data, that's not really maybe the person you should listen to, especially if, like, you don't have a degree around this kind of stuff. So, yeah, this is not a hoax. This is the real deal. This is a lot of people dying. Is it the end of the world kind of level of death? No. It definitely affects older people. That doesn't mean it's okay, but it definitely has a different feel because of that. If you're younger, you're at less risk, but it's still very much something we need to try to mitigate and try to soften the blow and try to give everybody the best chance of getting out of this thing alive while not completely destroying the economy. Look, there's no doubt. It's just like if we were in a time of war and you got a business that doesn't do well in a time of war, bummer. Like, that sucks. There's no way out of this thing without taking a hit, right? Like, certain people are going to have businesses that do well in this. Certain people are going to have businesses that get fucked up in this. I'm sorry. Like, I don't have a perfect answer there. It does appear that the federal government's going to come through with another round of stimulus, as I said before. Don't know how much that's going to help you if you have a local business. Unfortunately, this is just like a foreign invader has come to our shores and we have to deal, you know. Another way we can, by the way, tell this isn't some hoax is, like, look at other countries. You think, like, other countries are just willy-nilly locking down for the hell of it, having fun with that, destroying their economy as well? There's anybody that's going to hang their hat on this is a hoax at this point. I think Alex Jones is probably the podcast for you. Not to say Alex doesn't get it right from time to time, but you know, there's just nothing a reasonable person can say when looking at the best available data to say this is a hoax. It's just not. It's a real deal. We're getting better at it. It's definitely not what we thought it was or it could have been in March, and we should adjust our risk tolerance as a result. I think we have, but it also seems like, you know, cold weather is going to be bad for this. And in every other pandemic, the second wave has been worse than the first wave. And that's kind of what we're dealing with right now. Okay, we're near the 30-minute mark. It's kind of where I quit. I hope everybody has enjoyed what I have done thus far. Like I said, if you get to this point, I'm keeping the beer rule intact. So if you get to this point in the episode and you would like a free beverage, thanks to me, hit me up. I swear to God, I'll Venmo you, or you can come over and have a beer. Whatever. Even though I'm not really drinking right now, I'd make an exception for you, whoever you are. Cheers.